This is Twit.
Tim Cook, 10 years ago. I love this picture. I don't know what he's looking at. Something up there in the heavens. Maybe he's looking at Steve. I don't know. It was 10 years ago, actually, that Steve Jobs sent that famous letter naming Tim Cook as the new CEO of Apple. He said, Apple is not going to change. But, of course, one of the pieces of advice Cook has later said that Steve Jobs gave him is not to ask what Steve would do, but to ask what he would do. Great, I think piece in Apple Insider this week by William Gallagher. Speaking of pictures, there's some great pictures of here's Tim, a little bit younger, with Steve. During this kind of transitional phase where Tim was being groomed, he was this chief operating officer being groomed to take over as CEO. But this is my favorite row of pictures. Tim Cook from 1978, which means he must have been in high school, right? 1982, that's probably at Auburn. Then as a young, where did he start his career? Wasn't at Apple, was it?
Compaq before
Compaq, Apple. That's right, then, yeah.
He really was marked for greatness early on. He apparently, if you look at the jobs that he took and how quickly he escalated from company to company, he definitely had his, it's almost as if he decided that my job in life is to run a big organization that can make change at a world level. Because he was, there are people who take a job and they want to do a great job at that one place. They found their home and they want to stay there. And there are other people who are like, I've learned everything I can here. Where can I go next to learn more? Most impressive thing.
As a high school senior, which is this left-hand picture with the fro, he decided to go to Auburn, where he did study, in fact, computer science, coding, and technology. Went from Auburn right out of school to IBM. The PC had launched in 81. He graduated in 82, so he joined the team at the Research Triangle in North Carolina working on the PC. He spent a dozen years working on the PC, and then, as you said, he went on to Compaq. One of the things that he pioneered in those early years before he went to Apple was just-in-time manufacture. And that's the thing he brought to Apple, was this idea of you make it when you need it, not before. You don't stockpile a lot of stuff in a warehouse.
And I think that's what, I mean, there's a saying that from Omar Bradley that, you know, amateurs talk about strategy and professionals talk about logistics.
Right.
And what he really brought to Apple over time was logistics, you know, of really understanding how to, you know, get the most out of the supply chain in a stable way, you know, and a cost-effective way as well.
Yeah.
Given what they were doing.
Briefly, in between IBM and Compaq, he worked at a company called Intelligent Electronics. He was a chief operating officer there. This is also from the great piece in Apple Insider. He had a serious illness, or a serious scare anyway. They thought he might have multiple sclerosis, which of course is a degenerative disease and would have changed the course of his life. It turned out it was just exhaustion. He had just worked himself into a state, i.e. sold in 1997 to General Electric. Cook left and joined Compaq. But you have to think that this whole time, Cook is learning the logistics part. But I think it's a pithy quote, Alex. But you do have to make strategy at some point. You got to do more than just build supply lines to your existing.
It's just that those logistics, the logistics support you to make the strategy. You know, like you can do it. You have to have a plan for where you're going to go.
Yeah, good point.
But yes. If you don't have. You know, you don't have a bigger plan of how to actually get it done. It doesn't matter what you want to do.
He joined Apple March 11th, 1998. He spoke about the decision in a commencement speech at MIT. He said, I was never going to find my purpose working someplace without a clear sense of purpose of its own. He's talking about Compaq here. I tried meditation. I sought guidance and religion. I read great philosophers and authors. In a moment of youthful indiscretion, I might even have experimented with a Windows PC. And obviously, that didn't work. He got an offer from Apple March 1998, $500,000 signing bonus, $400,000 a year salary. So it was a good move. Deirdre O'Brien, who's currently head of Apple Retail, was Apple People, says, to this day, I remember meeting Tim, and right off the bat, it was very clear he was very focused. He was incredibly excited about being at Apple. He had a big job to do. You could tell he knew he had a mission. He was looking for a mission, and he found one at Apple. So a year, 6 months after joining, he got Apple's inventory down from 30 days to 6. The following year, he got it down to 2. This is that just-in-time manufacturing. Very interesting. There's two questions, though, as we look back at 10 years. One, has it been a good 10 years from Apple? I think you'd have to say yes.
Yeah.
Not that he created, I don't think he brought anything. Did he bring anything new to the table? Is there, the Apple Watch was already a product, going to be a product. He introduced it, but it was already going to be a product. Certainly the iPad and the iPhone and the Mac were longstanding products by the time he took over as CEO.
I think there's a lot of probably things coming, and those are pretty good business models. pretty good product line. You know, the it's hard to come up with something that is truly revolutionary every year. I think that even Apple only did it a couple times. I think he has fared better than Steve would in some ways, in just being able to manage the very complex, you know, both global infrastructure as well as the politics. Steve didn't really have any time for that. So I think that he's been able to work through a lot of things that I don't think Steve would have handled as well.
There's no question he was a perfect foil for Steve. He was the down-to-earth operations guy, could manage the politics, could manage the company. But for the first 10 years of his, more than that, 12 years of his tenure at Apple, he had Steve Jobs to kind of say charge and to point the company in the direction it was going to go. To some degree, I think it was always our concern back in 2011 that he would just continue to go in that direction but wouldn't forge new paths. Andy?
I think it's the more interesting question for me is Apple in a better position today than it was 10 years ago? And I think the answer is definitely yes. One of the biggest questions that analysts and even people who like Apple were asked themselves is, okay, but look at how much of your revenue is coming from the iPhone. What happens when somebody BlackBerry's Apple, if such a thing is possible, and suddenly it's no longer relevant, or suddenly everybody can make a phone that's as good and as attractive as an iPhone, only if they want a purple one, they can get one in purple. And now every time that there's a new revenue chart, it's still making the lion's share of money off of the iPhone, but services, accessories, those are just gaining, knowing that this is not a one-trick pony, that I used to think that they were a hardware design company, and they're a design company that likes to express its art through the creation of technology designs. Now, I really do think that they have an aesthetic that they can apply to pretty much any product that they want to put out there, even if it's just pushing electrons through a wire. So, I'm not going to guess whether Apple would be in as good a position under Steve or not. I can't predict that sort of thing, but I think very, very clearly that if people had any question as to whether Apple could survive without Steve Jobs at the helm, now it's almost impossible to imagine a world without Apple as a dominant player, as an influential and independent player on the world stage.
And we were talking before the show about how I don't think financial markets are germane to whether a company is good or not. It's just the financial bet on whether the company's going to make money in the future. But I should point out that the Apple stock price did go up 1,022% under Cook's leadership, which is not insignificant. They become a nearly $2 trillion company under him.
And I think that the revenue has gone up a little bit too. In addition to the stock price, it's not just that the stock price has gone up. It is that Apple just continues to perform better than each quarter, almost in straight lines. Every quarter from the year before, so it's quite a thing, to be able to do at that size. And the thing that right now is kind of scaring people about Apple right now is that in many ways, it's still moving like a startup, and it's this massive company, you know. So when you start doing things like, oh, we're, you know, when we talk about, you know, is Apple doing something revolutionary, the system on a chip is going to be a big deal. You know, like this is not, this is going to change a lot of things as it keeps on growing, you know, because now they have a unified architecture, and that is going to be very, very hard to compete and very, very hard to replicate. I mean, other people are talking about it, but saying they're going to do it and doing it are two very, very different things.
Yeah, that's a really good example of taking a precept of Steve Jobs, which is you've got to make the whole stack, and using your operational ability to actually make it happen.
I mean, and when you look at the scale of that, I mean, you have to be at Apple scale to be able to do that. You have to have those products to be able to do that. And when they start talking about in the quarterly legacy components, it means that they're not done yet. You know, like they're going to get rid of all of it, you know, until they own the whole stack, you know, and at that point, their ability to innovate very quickly and very quietly, you know, where, and because they have Xcode, because they have this is a very, very vertical integration. That becomes very, very difficult to compete with because it is so efficient, you know, and so that's going to be something. And I think that that's something that is very much what Steve dreamt about doing. And I think Tim is executing it.
Apple was worth $349 billion. God, it's hard to believe. $349 billion when Cook took over. It's now more than $2.45 trillion. He added $2 trillion to Apple's market value. That's... That's pretty good. I mean, that's a success. I mean, certainly that is the number one job of a CEO. I guess his report card's going to depend a little bit on what Apple does next. Yes? Whether AR or the car or whatever else they've got going. I think Apple Silicon is a A plus. But then what's next, right? How do you productize that?
I think the most important thing for any company, particularly at that scale, is to earn the ability to call their own destiny. And Apple certainly has that. It's a problem when you find yourself in a position where, oh my God, we haven't had a market beating product since we released the AirPods. So we have to come up with something that gets people's attention and really, really sells in the quadrillions of units. Like, well, no, Apple just simply has to keep their game plan. They don't have to be dictated to by the marketplace right now. They can continue to drive their company in a place that they think makes sense for their business strategy, their product lines, their goals, their aesthetic, and all that other sort of stuff. Whether they get there strictly by services, whether they get there by creating a product that does take people's imagination, like God can imagine a pair of like sunglasses that are so stylish that just like the Apple Watch, just like the AirPods, that people will want to be seen wearing them, whether they need glasses or not, and yet packs actual practical functionality in them. Again, that would be revolutionary. That's something that Tim is excited about. It's one of the few things that is an unannounced Apple product that Tim will talk about during calls and during interviews. So you know that that's something that is going to happen come hell or high water. But that's really not about the next breakthrough product. That's something that a smaller company really, really has to keep focusing on. And one of the things that we can't ignore is that it's Apple against pretty much everybody else in that space. One of the reasons why Apple is able to make the whole widget, as we say, and create that whole chip, now working on their own modem chips, doing whatever they want, is because they are the only company that makes phones that run iOS. Whereas if they did have to compete with an entire world market of that has to create an Indian localized phone, not just for local laws and production requirements, but also because of this market is different from any other world market. If they had to compete state by state by state worldwide, that would be something they're really not capable of doing, and they would be in big, big trouble. The fact that they have managed to define a phone market that is all theirs, that again they can control, and they don't have to respond, they don't have to create a blister pack $50 phone that has smart features and can run Facebook Messenger. They don't have to do that if they don't want to, and clearly they have taste and they don't want to.